you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have James Perloff back on the show. James returns to our show to discuss his latest book, COVID-19 and the Agenda to Come, Red Pilled. Of course, James is an independent researcher and author of several books, including 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw, Solving Political, Culture, and Spiritual Riddles, Past and Present, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, and The Shadows of Power. His website is jamesperloff.com. James, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very good, thanks, Tim. It's good to be back on with you.
Thanks for coming back. So it's interesting because I was just thinking that some of your research, of course, your books, I think have, prepared you well for this topic. In The Shadows of Power, you examine, you know, secret agendas, the oligarchy, the real movers and shakers, the financial and ruling elite, and the various conspiracies and truth is a lonely warrior throughout history. So this COVID-19 pandemic thing, of course, has, well, a lot of people suspect that there is a secret or agenda, or at least ulterior motive for a lot of the, not only the proclamation of a pandemic, but then the policies that have been instituted to supposedly deal with it. And your book covers this, so I'll let you take it from there.
Absolutely. Another thing is that I'm actually a registered nurse for 45 years, although I retired last year before the pandemic came on. So I have a little bit of perspective there, too. And actually, recently, religiously, they started to look at the scriptures and the church fathers and some of the extra-biblical books like Enoch. I started to realize that there's spiritual phenomena that have been consistent throughout history, even going back before the time of the biblical flood. And some of the phenomena we're seeing nowadays ties into that. But you don't really have to get into that. I mean, the book of Revelation alone speaks to some of what we're seeing today. But the spiritual, the historical, and, you know, the nursing background, I guess, combined to sort of prepare me to try to integrate with what's happening.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed is that people who study, whether it's 9/11 or the Kennedy assassination, the shenanigans of the Federal Reserve System, central banking system, the financial system, and also who have covered things like Agenda 21 and its, subprogram Agenda 2030, are very quick to identify what's going on with COVID-19 because there's a lot of parallels. And I would think that COVID-19 was sort of rolled out to achieve the objectives of Agenda 21, which they weren't getting with the environmental hysteria. They seem to be achieving a lot of the objectives that you see with Agenda 21 under the cover of the COVID-19 lockdown and the economic, you know, ramifications of the lockdown, but also the apparent plans they have for post-lockdown, the new normal or the Great Reset, as right. the World Economic Forum calls it. And so this isn't just conspiracy theory. They're openly talking about this. Politicians talk about this. And they're very keen to take any problem and make some sort of tendentious claim that this is therefore some sort of, I guess, vindication of things like climate change, environmental history. I saw Gavin Newsom saying that somehow the wildfires, which appear to be set up by arson, that somehow this is proof of climate change.
Right. Oh, yeah. know? yeah, there's different paradigms. You know, there's that mainstream paradigm, the explanation, and then there's the one which usually doesn't make a lot of sense. And then there's the people in the alt media who you talk to a lot of who are offering, you know, logical analysis, fact-based research, and really seeking after the truth.
So here, this book, you kindly sent it to me, and I read it. Thank you. It reads very well. It's a very good primer, I think. This is good for people who are just emerging from the blue pill and maybe might be open to looking into this. It's a good introduction to these things. It reads very quickly. I figure this was an expansion of the article that we discussed earlier this year, right?
Yes, I've written in this article called COVID-19 Red Pilled. And, of course, what happened was the situation kept developing, so I had to keep adding to that post. And some people said, well, I've already read your post. How do I know it's new? So I said, well, I'll put the new stuff in italics with a date. But I have to do that long enough, Tim. It kind of gets a little confusing for the new reader. And plus, you know, the book, which has turned out to be a paperback over just over 200 pages long, that's too long for somebody to want to sit down and read online. Mm-hmm. So I really felt that they reached a point. It was about the time of the George Floyd rioting when they temporarily, America's attention fell away from COVID just briefly, that I said, you know what, they're going to come back with COVID, and I'd better, if they're going to develop a vaccine at warp speed, I better warp speed a book out there that has a lot of the sensitive information, a lot of the videos that YouTube has taken down. What I did, Tim, is I either found a transcript or I created a transcript myself of some of these censored videos. I'm talking about people like Dolores Cahill and Knute Witkowski, the epidemiologist, and Drs. Erickson, Masihi, and they all got censored off of YouTube. So I said, let's preserve the most important things these guys had to say, and let's put it into a book. And I divided it into 27 chapters. You know, they're all short, you know, maybe an average of 6 or 7 pages mm-hmm. each. And everything is documented. Everything is endnoted. There's almost 300 endnotes. You know, they're at the end of each chapter, so people can quickly verify if what I'm saying is actually true or not. And I also decided to tack on an index because I wanted this book to be useful. I've read a lot of books that didn't have an index, and I said, I wish this had an index, because later on I'd be looking for a quote I'd seen in that book. That, well, now I can't find that quote because there's no index. So there's an index on the end as well.
Okay, so let's get into this. You break it down. Let's cover the main points. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I divided the book into 5 sections, and the first is on the lockdown. I start with a lockdown because that is not theoretical. It's indisputable what's happening to our economy. And you know, I talk about the impact on civil rights, on health, the economy itself, and I'll quote experts, medical experts, on whether or not this lockdown was really necessary. And also in that section, get into the whole social distancing and mask controversy. Then the second section is what I call the methodology of panic. And I start by putting COVID-19 in perspective. And in my lifetime, we've seen worse pandemics than this one, and we didn't lock down, right? So I talk about some perspective for COVID-19, and then I talk about some of the fake news that's been in the mainstream media. Then I have a chapter which is just a disclaimer, which is that even though I'm about to discuss ways that the death numbers have been artificially inflated, that doesn't rule out that there's going to be some kind of weird second wave. Bill Gates has been dropping hints about that, and it's possible that we might see a sharp spike in deaths come the next flu season or whenever they decide to launch something new. I put, that's the only sentence in my book which is in bold, because I wanted people to understand that I am not saying that this will always stay as relatively moderate as it appears now. But the subsequent chapters deal with how they've inflated the death rates by first the inaccurate models that came out from people like Neil Ferguson, then the conflating it with other diseases, which amped up the death rates, and then the tampering with death certificates, which Dr. Scott Jensen brought to light, and then the whole nursing home controversy, and then I talk about the accuracy of testing. And then the third part is about theories about what COVID-19 really is. So I have a chapter on the mainstream version, and then I have the bioengineered bioweapon theory. And then I talk about if it's a bioweapon, was it just accidentally leaked, like some people say, from Wuhan's bioweapons lab, or was this deliberately spread? Then I talk about the 5G theory, which has been much debated in alt media. And then I talk about other theories. I have one chapter just on some of the other theories around COVID. And it's the fourth section is called The Deep State's Endgame. We look at the population reduction plan. I have a full chapter on Bill Gates. A chapter on global vaccines. I have a chapter called 8 Reasons Why We Don't Need a COVID Vaccine. And then I have another chapter just for a 9th reason we don't need a vaccine, which is hydroxychloroquine. So much has been going on with that. And then now we got to chapter 23, the plan for a digital ID. Chapter 24 is on the caste of society. And chapter 25 is devoted to contact tracing and the surveillance state. And then the final part of the book is on what the future might bring. So I lay out some possible scenarios that might be looking likely from what the deep state is doing. And then finally, the last chapter is called Hope and Encouragement.
Nice to end on that point.
I just say that, to end it like 1984 with the saying, I love Big Brother, and Big Brother's foot is stomping on everyone's face for all eternity. We as Christians know that's not the way it ends. So the first thing I say in that chapter is that the prophecies do not end with Antichrist, they end with Christ. And I want people to understand, not to overuse a cliche, but the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, a lot of the function of these classic novels like Orwell's 1984 or even, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World is it blackpills everybody. It's hopeless.
Yeah. Right. There's no way out of this. And, humanly speaking, that might be true, although I do try to give a lot of examples of human hope in the sense that there are people who are awakening. I mean, we just saw 2 million people on the streets of Germany protesting the lockdown there. And I quote various religious leaders, police officers, doctors, members of parliament from abroad, giving people some hope that indeed that there's an awakening taking place, and that perhaps with sufficient resistance we can actually turn this thing back.
Yeah, they've revealed themselves, and so that's going to awaken or arouse a lot of people. Mm. It's the question of whether or not they have the ability to coalesce or the agency to fight back. But that's not a reason to be paralyzed with fear or despair, because then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And of course, as we all know, as Christians, despair is the ultimate sin. So,
And actually, there was a doctor I did not include in my book, but I heard an interview with her, Martha Daniels, another MD who's been speaking out. She said that her life was threatened. And she said, you know what? You go ahead and kill me then, because I'm going to, I'm willing to lay down my life in this situation. And the threats backed off. And she gave that as an example of encouragement. He says, sometimes the threats don't come true, and sometimes these people are pulling a bluff. And it may just be that if we take the attitude of resistance, they may back down and they may go back to the drawing board. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see life get restored somewhat to normal. I'm not real confident it's going to go that way, but I think we should give it our very best.
Yeah, I mean, it is largely a bluff because they still don't have the manpower. It's a mind trick. It's mind control.
Right.
The psychology of compliance and obedience to the system, which people suffer under. I saw a videotape in Spain where gendarmes or police came to arrest a woman and fine her for not wearing a mask and protesting, not practicing social distancing. And the crowd chased him away.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, that's the way it should be. I remember there was early on in this lockdown, there was a case where the police, I think it was in California, they're trying to keep people off the beach. And then the whole crowd just rushed to the beach and the police said, okay.
That's what you have to do, yeah.
Yeah, when enough of the people rise up, they have to give in. And so I'm hoping that we can rally the crowd, so to speak.
And I saw one incident in, I think it was in London, where it took about 20 police officers to arrest and fine one woman. Because the crowd was, so, I mean, with those ratios, proportions, they simply couldn't enforce it if, simply, 5% of the public came out and protested.
Right. That's why it's so important for us to get the message out to as many people as possible. And one thing I wanted to mention, too, is that, people, I think one reason they're more awake and more open to hearing something is that when you're personally affected by something, it really changes you. Like if your child has been affected by autism, you're more open to hearing discussion of vaccines. Now, we've got tens of millions of people in this country alone who have put out our work. And so they are personally affected. I think those people are probably much more prone to listening to talk of the deep state and talk to what the agenda is behind all of this.
Especially when they've been thrown out of work for no good reason. I mean,
right?
It's like it wasn't the virus that did this. It wasn't a disease. It was the lockdown, the reaction. And now it's becoming clearer and clearer that it was, at the very least, it was an overreaction. I don't think it was a planned reaction. I don't think it's an overreaction has given them a pass. But nevertheless, in the minds of the public, they're thinking, what's going on here? And still, this late in the game, where the death rate, even the official death rate, which is problematic, as we've talked about, is off by more than 90%. And it's now a case-demic. It's not a pandemic. And now they're citing cases. And I and others predicted this would be the case come summer, because they simply couldn't furnish the deaths that they needed for the hysteria, and the hysteria is dying down. Now it's just momentum, where people just following, because these are the dictates. I heard there's an interesting lawsuit in Ohio where a man is suing, a lawyer there is suing the governor,
right,
and the state, and saying that you simply just can't declare an emergency without any basis, without any evidence, and he's challenging the factual basis of the emergency, and therefore, then saying you're in violation of people's constitutional rights, and that these things you just can't say a emergency is self-justifying. This is the problem with these emergency powers. They say, well, you have these emergency powers. Okay, what's the basis for the emergency powers? They say, well, we have this. We have these statistics. Well, this is bunk. This is BS. The challenge, the science or the methodology, the computer modeling, all these things that they cite. The premier is Victoria. Dan Andrews in Australia is citing a supercomputer model for his continued lockdown. So now HAL 5000 is dictating policy or something. I don't know, supercomputer. But there's got to be some factual basis for their claims of an emergency. And of course, we know now that even the official count shows something on par severe flu season. Why the lockdown,
Right. And these lawsuits are taking off. I heard about the one in Ohio. I only saw the headline today, but I understand that Trudeau in Canada is being now hit with a lawsuit over masks. And in my own state of Massachusetts, our Governor Charlie Baker is being sued by as a class action lawsuit by businesses and churches challenging his authority. He's invoked this 1950 law, which gave the governor emergency powers. That law was enacted because the Soviets had detonated a nuclear device with a lot of help from Americans in 1949. Okay, obviously this is not a nuclear attack, and to apply that law to this situation, it's unconstitutional. And of course, Gretchen Whitmer, who's the lockdown queen over in Michigan, she's being hit with a lawsuit by a number of the medical services whose patients are suffering because they can't get the needed treatments, the non-COVID treatments. Everything, heart disease, cancer, everything's going begging for this COVID onslaught that never occurred. And I like the fact that people are going to the courts. I think this is a good thing to do. And actually, a courtroom is a great place also to expose the falsity of a lot of the statistics and get that out in the open.
Yeah, at the very least, you should be able to summon the governor and cross-examine her or him and say, okay, these claims, well, this is all wrong. There's no basis for these claims. This is all a forecast, which has not come to pass. So why continue to lock down? You keep on citing science. Well, what science? This isn't science. You say it's science, then you you don't cite anything solid to back these policies. So you get them into court, and that also coupled with some good civil resistance, where you just go out and you protest and you don't abide by these rules. Because they have, and it's not violent or anything. You get some of this resistance. I think it was in Michigan where the sheriffs weren't enforcing it. So the attorney general herself went after that barber up there, the attorney general Nussel.
Oh, I remember that story. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, so she's vindictively going after a particular person. Then she lost that case. And it's kind of funny because some of these rulings, if the courts do rule against the governors, these aren't good faith interpretations of the law. These are violations of their state and also the federal constitution of the 14th Amendment violations. And there should be a severe penalty when a chief executive officer who does swear to uphold and defend the constitution blatantly violates it, even if they are citing an emergency power. There's obviously weren't made in good faith, and they should be subject. Now this is a political solution, but you'd think the state legislature could start bringing impeachment proceedings against some of these governors.
And I would love that.
And there's various recall efforts too. But the problem is what that reveals is, and this kind of I think speaks to the true nature of the scamdemic, is that this transcends parties. This is sort of a uniparty system. Oligarchs are planning this, and it's. I think the silence, or at least lack of resistance on part of the Republican Party, in reaction to say, some of the extreme Democrats this summer, I think speaks volumes about what's really happening. Because when you have the Vice President Mike Pence showing up with a mask on, the Majority Leader of the Senate wearing a mask and sort of doing the participating in this charade. It means that they're part of the scam, or at least they're buffaloed by it, and they're not providing any resistance to it, because the masks themselves, rulings out, everyone cites the science, and you write about in the book how there's no science behind wearing masks. In fact, anything, the science suggests that it's not good for you. The mask does maintain the illusion of a pandemic, of a crisis, and that helps with these politicians in maintaining the various lockdowns or phased reopenings, which are crushing the economies, which at the very least some people might interpret or infer as some sort of attempt to hurt Donald Trump's reelection bid. But I think the stakes are much higher than that, which what your book suggests, of course, that this is an attempt to destroy what remains of the real economy so they can impose a post-COVID new normal, the Great Reset.
Yeah, that seems to be a huge part of it, the cashless society, using China, which is now cashless. Even the beggars there don't take money. They swipe cards, to take handouts. I was actually talking to a podcast host. It wasn't during a podcast. I was having dinner with him, but he said he had a friend in China, and the guy was caught jaywalking by not a policeman, but by a facial recognition system that identified him, and he was penalized for jaywalking, and the fine was taken out of his account digitally. And so the whole thing was just Orwellian. It really does seem that China as a totalitarian state with high tech, which is what I think Henry Kissinger was trying to create when he brought Nixon over there in the early 70s, that was the vision for it. They're sort of the model, the prototype for the situation we might see in the future, where there's no money, but you have a social credit score, and if you're a good boy or a girl and obey the government, you'll be able to travel and shop. But if you're not, you're basically going to be, confined to mopping floors and won't be able to, leave your house except once a week or whatever, definitely we're headed towards that, in that direction. And there's definitely concern about this forum for January 2021, the economic reset that the World Economic Forum has announced they're going to do. And they've had Prince Philip and the head of the World Bank all talking about this forthcoming forum. So it looks like something I would, you know, obviously the situation we're now with tens of millions of people out of work, obviously it's an impossible situation for the states to continue to pay the unemployed people, because they depend on jobs, taxes from people's for their revenue, and they don't have that money coming in now. So it's unsustainable. And the people at the top obviously know that, and they know that people are going to be begging for help. And so they'll come in with this reset with some kind of a, you know, digital ID and coupled with a, you know, some sort of cashless system, which they're already experimenting with now in Africa.
Yeah, that's in conjunction with, was it MasterCard?
Yeah, MasterCard and the Gavi Vaccine Alliance and this AI company called Trust Stamp. They're actually integrating your ID with your vaccine record, with your payments, your fiscal status, and that's obviously being modeled for the whole world. That may not be the exact system. They're probably going to work out some bugs in that system, but that's certainly the direction that they're taking us in.
It's ID 2020, which is also a Bill and Melinda Gates operation, where they cite that everyone has a natural right to be identified.
Oh yeah, which means Big Brother can identify you too.
I like that. Yeah, I thought that, you know, that, I thought you had a natural right for anonymity, you know, to a certain extent, your privacy. But now it's all the right to be. Big problem is not being able to be identified by the system, putting everyone online, which could be the true 5G plan here, because 5G enables the Internet of Things, everything to be monitored, and of course they'll sell it. Because it's necessary to monitor things, as contact tracing is all about. So you need to monitor people's health constantly. I mean, hourly or hourly temperature checks, quarterly vaccinations. I'm like, it's absurd, because what you buy, how much energy you use, where you go, all this is necessary, and all this is being sold. Then if not that, there's the convenience argument, right? It's easier not to have to order food, let your refrigerator do it, or it's easier not to have to pay for anything with cash. That's what the commercials will show, and they'll show that you can actually, you don't have to get together for the holidays. One thing is they'll get rid of the holidays like they did with Easter, but you can Zoom or Skype with people, right? And that's the same thing. They'll show commercials, right? And you already see this,
Yeah, more and more new normals. Yeah.
Yeah. And that will be the broad corporate campaign. And one thing you mentioned, of course, the World Economic Forum, and a lot of people respond. I've gotten this response from people that, or sort of have an allergic reaction to conspiracy, meaning they just don't think these things are possible, or they've been brainwashed into thinking that conspiracy theory is only for crazy people, because obviously there are no conspiracies in the world. There's only official conspiracies like 9/11, but anyone else is a conspiracy theorist in the pejorative sense. But the World Economic Forum, the Davos where they meet, whether it's Bilderberg in these things, or whether it's the Council of Foreign Relations, which you've written extensively about, done research on, talked about a lot, is these are coordinating bodies for the elite. And it is through these institutions, through these channels, that something like the COVID-19 pandemic would have been dreamt up or organized or coordinated. And so obviously when you have the World Economic Forum and you have the benevolent oligarchs and billionaires that converge there every year in Switzerland, they're deciding how to run the world. Obviously, that's going to require an element of coordination and also, dare I say, conspiracy, because you can't implement some of these reforms through the regular political channels. Not like you could put a platform out there, run candidates on the platform, get them elected, or propose this legislation in this various parliaments and legislatures of the world and have open debate about them, because they'll never get passed. No, what they do is, through their control of the media, the medical system, the universities, various governments that they've installed, change agents or agents throughout the years, they can then when the time is right, create a crisis. And then with the crisis, they unfold the reforms or the reaction or how to deal with the crisis. And obviously when Klaus Schwab, who was one of the founding members of the World Economic Forum, has openly said that this is a crisis that can't go to waste, and this is an opportunity to fundamentally change the global economy, make it more equitable and fair. Okay, you think billionaires are interested in making a more equitable and fair world? Fine, I got a bridge to sell you that's in Brooklyn. but I mean, no one's denying. I mean, if you don't think that Davos or the World Economic Forum coordinates and plans and does things, you don't think it's consequential what they do and say? I mean, it's pretty obvious to me.
Yeah, we're talking about the most powerful people in the world, and you're mentioning the opportunity. I was watching a series of speeches given at the World Economic Forum, and every person, it seemed, referred to it as an up. You know, we're actually looking at lost opportunities now, as we're seeing so many tens of thousands of small businesses close permanently, and even the large corporations laying off thousands or tens of thousands of employees. Even if a company like Boeing doesn't go out of business, it's still laying off. Mm-hmm. United Airlines is supposed to have a huge layoff upcoming. The big companies, and so it certainly has. COVID has not been an opportunity. It's been a loss of what's been left of the American dream for most people. If there's any opportunity that's been seen in this so far, it's been the elite making. I'm sure you've seen the analyses of the billions of dollars. Is it that Jeff Bezos made $12 billion in one day during the lockdown? I mean, these guys, Zuckerberg and Bezos and Gates are doing great during the lockdown, but the average person, this is not an opportunity. This is very deadly to their future.
Yeah, it's disaster capitalism. It's making money off misery. And I don't know how you have the global economy contract 30-45% and then have Bezos and Gates increase their wealth by a third or 40% or something. How does that work? I tell you how it works is because they've created a crisis where they can come in and set up a situation where their business models are make money, whether it's pharmaceuticals, whether it's contract tracing, whether it's, doing away with brick and mortar retail and going everything online. You have the infrastructure to pick up the slack. And, if you don't, again, if the term conspiracy theory, conspiracy bothers you, then think of it as a business plan, It's fairly obvious to me at this point. And the question is, how long will people tolerate it? That is, you keep the economy suppressed and you make sure these businesses never open and people become more desperate. They'll be willing to accept new terms that would be universal basic income, the new economy, and all the controls that come with all the, they probably won't overtly, at least in the United States, require a vaccine, but they'll make it a policy of, no jab, no job, no jab, no travel,
right.
No jab, no shop, all this. So they make all these conditions. And they've created at least the justification for this, with mandated people wearing masks, because already that's a violation of bodily autonomy.
Right. And, it looks like they're boiling the frog a little bit here. They made people stand outside grocery stores, wearing masks, mm-hmm. and standing 6 feet apart. And they made that a new normal. And you can't, in many stores, as you know, you can't even go in and buy anything. There's a sign on the door that says you have to wear a mask. Well, it's not that big of a leap to go from that to saying you can't go in unless you've got your immunity certificate proving that you've been vaccinated, that you've already acclimated people to that much obedience. So this is where we really need to be alerting people and waking them up. And that's also why there's so much censorship taking place right now, because they know they're taking something of a gamble with this, putting people out of work and people asking questions as to what's going on. So they have to make sure that real news, which they're calling fake news, doesn't circulate.
Yes, if you contradict or disagree with the World Health Organization you'll get deplatformed or kicked off Facebook or YouTube. But the World Health Organization itself contradicts itself. So
yeah. I made the exact same point as you, Tim, in the book. I said, you know, the World Health Organization said you did need a mask, and it said it didn't. You didn't need a mask, and they said that, you know, it's symptomatic people who transmit COVID, and then they said asymptomatic people can. So they contradict themselves. So what is the problem? You know, I compare it to the. One comparison is the jury system in the American justice system, where you obviously want both sides of the story heard. You don't want to hear just the defense of the prosecution. You want to hear the facts presented on both sides so that a jury can reach a decision. And it's the same way in science. You know, science has to be open. Different viewpoints when you're trying to reach a conclusion have to be presented. You know, Edison said he got the light bulb wrong thousands of times before he got it right. You know, in science, you're going to have mistakes being made, and this is part of working out scientific truth. But for Susan Wojcicki of YouTube, the CEO, to be saying that anybody who disagrees with WHO is going to be censored, and we're talking about excellent doctors. I mentioned some before, Witkowski, Erickson, Masihi, and Cahill, and Judy Mikovits to that, you know, and quite a few others. You can be a highly qualified medical scholar, and simply because you're disagreeing with whose chief financial backer at this point is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, you will not be heard. That's never how science has been achieved. It's just flagrant censorship, nothing to do with good science at all. Or it's not even good for people if they can't hear alternative views. So we're looking at a situation where they've left themselves open to some pretty sharp criticism and some flagrant departures from pure logic. And I'm just hoping that there's enough logic left in our blue-pilled public to awaken the masses and resist this thing.
Well, it's interesting because there's some irony here, because you have situation where we're told, listen, follow the science, listen to the experts, but the spokesman for the COVID-19 response is Bill Gates, who doesn't even have the benefit of a college degree.
Right, and in that sense, I suppose, since I'm a registered nurse myself, I guess he's less qualified, he has less experience in healthcare than I do. Yeah, that is one of the great ironies, and this needs to be pointed out. I've never seen a mainstream journalist question him on this, but the fact that he has no medical qualifications and yet he is really dictating policy, telling us what we should and shouldn't do, giving his TED Talks, and he's got seven vaccine factories. He said publicly he's funding seven vaccine factories for COVID. Why is this guy with no training or credentials being allowed to, full expression, while people with PhDs are being railroaded into attempted oblivion?
Yeah, of course, Bill Gates, he's the biggest donor, I think, since the United States dropped out. He funds the World Health Organization. He funds the Imperial College of London. $79 million in 1 year, I think. You know, and he funds, if you look at any institution, usually, whether it's Johns Hopkins or one of the many institutions that advise the various governors on their lockdowns, they all are recipients of Gates' largesse. So there, right, you see the contours of the octopus.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, an entire fake paradigm was created, and, you know, again, I have a chapter on perspective. So putting this a little bit of perspective, okay, when I was six in 1957, I got a flu shot at a neighbor who was a doctor, and he said, this is really going to hurt. And man, that shot really did hurt. He said, you can kick me. So I kicked him. I kicked him hard. But you know, the 1957 Asian flu killed 1 million people worldwide, and 116,000 in the U.S., according to the CDC. We have to remember now that even the official numbers, I'm not sure the official number right now is on COVID. It might be around 800,000. That's still less than the Asian flu. But remember, the world population was 2.5 million, less than a third of what it is now. So that translates to 3 million. So that pandemic was a good 4 or 5 times deadlier than COVID, yet nobody dreamed of locking down businesses, social distancing, or wearing masks. And it was, we could do the same thing with this 68 Hong Kong flu, which had around a million deaths. And I can say, as a registered nurse in the history of America, we have never quarantined healthy people. You don't do that. You only quarantine the sick. It is absolutely counterproductive to quarantine healthy people. This should be obvious to people. Unfortunately, a lot of people, including some of my medical professionals, don't see it. But it should be very obvious that we are doing something that is that contradicts history and logic.
Of course, locking things down and keeping people inside and keeping people inactive is just bad medicine, because one of the greatest defenses against flu-like diseases, respiratory illnesses, is vitamin D. And that's one of the big, I think, indicators, or at least one of the things that lead to an acute reaction, is vitamin D deficiency to these things.
Right. I quote a study in my book from Northwestern University that shows a very strong correlation between COVID-19 death and vitamin D deficiency. And of course, one of the best ways to get vitamin D is to be outside. And yet you have some countries where they're forbidding people to go outside for more than an hour. But also sunlight will kill a virus. And yet it's so sad. In my town, I remember they've taken these down, but you saw the basketball hoops boarded up, and even in the playgrounds, the swings were taped off so children can sit. Well, they're not going to get the COVID in a swing. I mean, the sunlight, the ultraviolet light will kill a virus. And by the way, a virus needs a host organism to continue existing. A virus can't just sit there on a metal object in the sunlight and survive. It won't. And that's just basic virology. So again, the lack of logic in what's being done, we're just hoping, I guess they're hoping that enough fluoride's been put in people's water that they're not going to think straight. But we're hoping that there will be enough people that we can get a really strong resistance to this going.
Well, there was a time people just had common sense about these things, or just common wisdom, particularly in relation to children, because it's understood that particularly young kids, even infants or babies, toddlers, is as they're crawling around, putting things in their mouth, getting exposed to these things, they're building up their immune system. They're exercising the immune system, which is good for them in balance. I know we gag at the thought of what a kid will put in its mouth when he's not being watched, and usually that's for fear of choking. But we just kind of know that exposure to these germs is actually on balance a good thing, because we're constantly exposed. So obsessive compulsive disorder in everybody, in cleaning and everything, not to mention the exposure to the various cleaning chemicals that are chemicals that are in these things, is actually worse for you, because you're supposed to be exposed to these things. That's this nature. And that goes, speaks to the whole medical paradigm that we live in, the sort of reductionist germ theory that's been weaponized lately with Dr. Fauci, is the fact that we're constantly at war. It's a war model with nature. And this maybe it speaks to even this Darwinian model, where everything's kind of arbitrary by chance. No, there's a logic, there's a logos to these things. And our bodies, our immune systems, are all part of our entire body, and it interacts with everything. And it's not, so we're supposed to be exposed to these things, and perhaps illness or pathology sets in when there's something off balance, poor diet or something, which, by the way, Mr. Gates, and Dr. Fauci never seemed to address, because, it used to be that prevention was worth an ounce of prevention was worth a pound of cure. But that's a poor business model for the medical industrial complex.
Right. They can't make any money off of this. And Bill Gates, he may have, but I've never personally seen him when he's interviewed ever talk about things like, do healthy things, get exercise, fresh air, sunlight, eat right, get things that help your immune system, like vitamin D and vitamin C, just common sense stuff that we've known for years. If Bill Gates, the only solution is a chemical laden vaccine in a syringe, and that's it. That's the only way to get healthy. That is one of the things that clues you right away that this man is not sincere, and he does not have our best interests at heart, and why we should be staying away from any vaccine that he comes up with.
Yeah, especially his track record with vaccines, correct?
Yeah. Well, Robert F. Kennedy talks about that. He had a post on Instagram where he just summarized the whole history of Bill Gates, and it just went absolutely viral. And it's in my book. Let me just quote a little bit of that. He says, promising, this is again quoting Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the nephew of President John F. Kennedy and the son of Senator Robert F. Kennedy, both of them were assassinated in the 60s. He says, quote, promising to eradicate polio with 1.2 billion, Gates took control of India's National Advisory Board and mandated 50 polio vaccines up from 5 to every child before age 5. Indian doctors blame the Gates campaign for a devastating vaccine-strained polio epidemic that paralyzed 496,000 children. In 2017, the Indian government dialed back Gates' vaccine regimen and evicted Gates and his cronies from the NAB, the National Advisory Board. Polio paralysis rates then dropped precipitously. And he gives many examples of the damage done by many of Gates' vaccines, but one I just want to mention, because this had caught my attention even before Robert F. Kennedy was talking about it. It was the situation in Kenya with the fake tetanus vaccine. I'll quote Kennedy again here. In 2010, Gates committed $10 billion to the WHO, promising to reduce population in part through new vaccines. In 2014, Kenya's Catholic Doctors Association accused the WHO of chemically sterilizing millions of unwilling Kenyan women with a phony tetanus vaccine campaign. Independent labs found the sterility formula in every vaccine tested. And I just want to mention that the way they grew wise to this, you know, in America, I know in our medical system, you only get the tetanus vaccine once every 10 years, but they were giving three and they were targeting childbearing age women. It didn't make sense. That's why they started getting suspicious. And then these women couldn't reproduce. And if you actually go back, there's an excellent four-part series by James Corbett called Who is Bill Gates? And he talks about the background of the Rockefeller Foundation and how in the 70s they were creating this task force on vaccines for fertility regulation. And in 1995, they're already developing an anti-HCG vaccine. Now, HCG stands for human chorionic gonadotropin, that's the hormone that supports development of an egg in a woman's ovary. That's the exact formula against this HCG that they found in the Kenyan devastation where women were sterilized against their will. By the way, if Bill Gates is sterilizing people against their will, do you really want this guy to be giving you and your children vaccines? I mean, but the track record, and I've just quoted a couple of examples from what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Stated about Gates, but a horrific track record. And again, do you want to go with somebody who has a record of not doing things that are healthy for people, but doing so many things that have been causing death, paralysis, and sterility?
Yeah, the World Health Organization admitted to that.
Mm-hmm.
So they admitted to secretly sterilizing women under the guise of a vaccination program. Now, of course, the World Health Organization is made up of people, and individuals had to take that decision to implement that policy. And also Mr. Gates supposedly was aware of this. That now, from what I understand, if you were to give someone a vaccine and lace it with something that's unhealthy for them, I think causing them, it is unhealthy not to let them, you know, to sterilizing them is unhealthy against their will. That seems to me that's a crime.
Yes, and a very important point you're making here, Tim. The vaccines contained ingredients that were not disclosed. None of the women knew that there was a sterility formula in these vaccines. So that raises the question, when and if Bill Gates brings a COVID vaccine to America, what undisclosed chemicals will be in that vaccine? That's very significant. The fact that he has done this already, that he's produced vaccines where they lied about the ingredients, that is that is red lights and alarm bells going off all over the place. You would really, if you're really informed, you would have to really be crazy to take a Bill Gates vaccine or extremely, extremely blue-pilled.
Now, that's not something you hear like Black Lives Matter talking about.
No. in fact, I thought it was interesting that the Black Lives Matter riots that erupted right after the George Floyd incident occurred right after the lockdowns began to ease. And mm-hmm. a few of these small businesses finally had an opportunity to recover. And yet countless businesses were destroyed by looting and arson. And it just seemed like that was a continuation of the policy of destroying America's economy.
Yeah, and there's a lot of questions about the fires out west now because they're 90% of them are in residential areas, which has never happened before. Versus just during these riots when their arson was being committed, and there seems to be a network or coordination going on, sort of a plan just to create a discordian, you know, unraveling of the country. It's a color revolution, and there should be an investigation in that too. But the apparently the DHS and the FBI are too busy chasing white supremacist organizations, none of which actually exist, but they're out there. But you would think if an organization, of course, this is the World Health Organization, which we're not allowed to contradict on YouTube. They've been caught carrying out this illegal, not ethical, but illegal and immoral program. You think there should be consequences for this, for the people who took this decision, including Bill Gates himself. You know, wherever this decision was taken, I'm sure there's a law against surreptitiously sterilizing people or tainting medicine with undisclosed chemicals. Yeah, but there's no investigation. There's no indictments. There's not even a lawsuit that I'm aware of. I mean,
right. Well, I know that, as I'm sure you've heard, and I mentioned in the book, there is actually a petition to investigate the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for Crimes Against Humanity that has over, I believe it's over 650,000 signatures now. And I also quote in my book, Sarah Cuniel, a member of the Italian Parliament, she gave a blistering 7-minute speech in which she told the Prime Minister of Italy, says, next time you get a call from Bill Gates, refer him to the International Court of Justice. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are people waking up, and, 650,000 signatures, that's a lot on a petition. And that doesn't mean it's going to be acted upon because Bill Gates knows he's protected, like the mafia used to.
Yes.
They would say the mafia would protect a business, you know. He's got protection. He's got people in high places that are protecting him. But it's really nice to see a large number of the public awakening. And I do pray this will turn into a great awakening. And I really feel that we should. I think God wants us to fight this battle. He wants his will done on earth as in heaven. He does not want a Luciferian system ruling the earth that's entirely contrary to his will. So I do not think that even though the book of Revelation has prophecies about these things, that we should not be 100% active in opposing it.
Now, mind you, this is all over a virus, which even with the official tally has a 99.74 survival rate. It's 80%. I think was it 90% of the people who succumb to this are over the age of 80. It's virtually no risk for people under the age of 40. Doesn't exist for children, basically. I think it was Robert Redfield, who's the head of the CDC, said that the risk of a child succumbing to COVID-19 is 1 in 1,000,000. So basically, that doesn't exist. That risk doesn't really exist on a statistical level. But the pandemic itself was largely a creation of a statistical, you know, manipulation. It was confected by manipulation of the death certificates. I think they borrowed from a lot of deaths that would have occurred, or they created the deaths with hysteria, like in the retirement homes, where they created a very toxic and dangerous environment otherwise wouldn't have existed. A lot of people were neglected. Many people simply died of neglect, or they were put down as COVID. These things. So this, and that's why I made the point that if you wanted to cure or get rid of the pandemic, simply, and Robert F. Kennedy made this point on his website, simply just reimpose the death reporting standards that were in place between 2002 and 2019, because that that would cause the COVID deaths to drop 90%.
Right. Exactly. So
there you go. Just change how it's reported, and the pandemic goes away. And of course, recently the CDC came out and said only 6% of the reported deaths were exclusively COVID deaths. And right. Then there's a problem with identifying the virus itself because the test itself unreliable. They identify a genetic sequence, RNA, which is similar to SARS-CoV-1, and they call it SARS-CoV-2. And it turns out, of course, with over 200 generic coronaviruses out there, there's no way to even identify, but they identify some genetic material in a sample. They just say it's COVID-19. If you go out and get killed in a motorcycle accident, they'll say you died of COVID-19. And that's actually happened.
Yeah, that's been happening. Yeah. And this is one of the main methods of fear mongering. You mentioned the death certificates, against Dr. Scott Jensen, who's interviewed by Laura Ingraham on Fox and other stations. And he was one of the foremost whistleblowers on this, but just to quote the CDC itself, it says, quote, and you can find this online, in cases where a definite diagnosis of COVID cannot be made, but is suspected or likely, it is acceptable to report COVID-19 on a death certificate as probable or presumed. And there's another quote, this is from the National Vital Statistics System, branch of the CDC, which says, quote, COVID-19 should be reported on the death certificate for all decedents with the disease caused or is assumed to have caused or contributed to death. And also quote Deborah Birx, the coronavirus response coordinator, saying that, yes, anybody who dies from other causes, but is also has COVID, is counted as a COVID death. And this is how they were able to ramp up the numbers so greatly. And a great example was Italy, where initially they're reporting 8-10% death rate for COVID. And then Bloomberg had an article, which I quote, and the Italian government admitted that actually 99% of these people who were dying of COVID actually had comorbidities, advanced lung disease, advanced cancer. And as the German physician Klaus Puschel put it, the COVID was just a straw that broke the camel's back. And so this is actually quite scandalous. It's one reason why Germany had a death rate of only 0.3% in change compared to Italy's initial 8-10%, was that Germany was counting the deaths honestly, and in Italy was not. And this has caused quite a few flare-ups in the Italian parliament, which I quote parliament member Scarbi, just protesting the faking of deaths. So there are people, awake people everywhere in politics, in medicine, in the churches. They seem to be in the minority, but I'm hoping that as they raise the alarm bell, more and more people will be waking up.
Yeah, weak response of the churches was particularly discouraging.
Yes.
How no one seemed to stand up. And the fact, churches, something like the Catholic Church, an institution which has, the reach and the breath, the breath to actually oppose the state, didn't. It just backed down. I guess they fear their 501c3, status being pulled or losing their $100 million a year subsidy with their, role they play in immigration. A lot of corruption. I think bribery and blackmail has played a big part in this, in the weakening of the churches, because that you really want to look for some resistance in the churches to these things, and you didn't get any.
Right.
Individual parishes might have, and of course, your individual priests, but as far as the episcopacy, it really did not perform well. The bishops just completely backed out, according the including the big bishop in Rome.
Right. Tim, I became Orthodox Christian in 2017. I grew up agnostic, then I was in a New Age cult for 10 years, and then finally became a Christian in the 83, and I was attending the Protestant evangelical churches, and then I started to really get revolted by the Christian Zionism and a lot of bad theology, and I was attracted to the traditional forms of worship. I have to say that, very similar to what you're talking about with the Catholic Church, I've been so disappointed to see the Orthodox Church, you know, adopt, you know, bowing before the power of the state. I'd already seen this beginning to happen, but, you know, requiring masks, you know, a limited attendance, mm-hmm. you can only walk one way. Even the way the communion is given has been altered. You know, they have live streams and Zoom meetings and things like that. And honestly, the people are doing the best they can. Most of them, they're just blue-pilled politically.
Yes.
But they're very sincere individuals, but very disappointing. Now, I do have a friend of mine whose baptism I sponsored into Orthodoxy, and he has been in attended a church, which is I've been going to a Greek Orthodox church. He's been going to a non-Greek Orthodox church. I won't mention which one it is, but they have not been following the lockdown at all. They've been maintaining the service. And actually, in my book, I quote spokesman from all branches. I quote Archbishop Vigano, mm-hmm. who's spoken out about COVID as being political. And I also quote Chuck Baldwin as a representative of the evangelicals, saying that if Hillary Clinton had ordered the churches to close, and this never would have happened, he faults Trump for ordering that lockdown on Friday the 13th in March. I'm making it a nationwide phenomenon. But I also quote Elder Athemios of Mount Athos, which is a monastic state in Greece, who speaks out. He says that they're bringing on the mark of the beast. He's very, very plain about it. He's very discerning. And he says that we should not be locking down. We should not be afraid of the virus. We never were afraid of disease in the past. And he commends such the other churches, such as the Bulgarian and Serbian and other churches that are not following lockdown. And I wish that more of the Greek Orthodox were listening to people like Elder Athemios. So I even quote Louis Farrakhan, you know, from the Nation of mm-hmm. Islam. He's been speaking out condemning Dr. Fauci and Bill and Melinda Gates for population control schemes. So there are religious leaders throughout the world who are awake. It's just that, you know, as so often is the case in the Matrix, the people who are red-pilled are in the minority, regardless of what sphere, whether it's political or religious or any other. But I encouragement in these people, and I quote them at the end of the book to show, yes, we do have awake leaders and we should be listening to them.
Yeah, I mean, you've had a situation where for decades, like the honor of the Vatican, the Holy See signed on to, you know, like the sustainability compact, which means ultimately population control, abortion, and these things. So it's not maybe that it's simply they're not sophisticated. I find it hard to believe. But the churches have to awaken to the reality of covert and psychological warfare. And, you know, it's, you know, yeah, we're told to love our enemies, but not deny that we have them. And so, yeah, you know, you'd think they'd be a little bit more politically savvy, especially when it was so, you know, I mean, get them to cancel Easter celebrations, you know, and it sets us up because what's going to happen come Christmas time this year?
Right, exactly. There's something about Gretchen Whitmer and Christmas, or maybe it's just a meme I made where she forbids Santa Claus. I think I made a meme where she forbids Santa Claus to come down the chimney because it violates social distancing. But absolutely, you know, one of the stunning things about this was the timing, in that Easter was canceled globally. I think canceled globally for the first time since Christianity was legalized in the 4th century by Constantine. And there was a British hard rock band called The Darkness, which last year, around the fall of 2019, came out with an album called Easter is Canceled. And, you know, we just went past 9/11. I had many examples of 9/11 predictive programming. To me, put it on an album called Easter is Canceled, that's some predictive programming going on there. Some things we could talk about, like Event 201, but where that indicated that there were people who actually foresaw this thing coming. But the cancellation of Easter services was one of the marks that this is a Luciferian agenda, which we've known all along, from the abortion, from the rise of Satanism, the transgenderism, the transhumanism. We know this is a satanic plot. We know that it's been prophesied in the Book of Revelation that there would be a mark that no one could buy or sell without. It's almost in your face. Despite, you know, this Contact Tracing Act, House Resolution 6666. Yeah, I mean, give me a break. You know, I mean, it's in your face.
Bobby Rush, didn't he negotiate the deal like in the summer before?
Right. This is one of the things. I have a chapter on predictors of the COVID crisis. And during the summer of 2019, Congressman Bobby Rush, according to testimony, met in Rwanda with members of the Gates Foundation to decide who would get the contact tracing contracts from this thing. And this is before the Wuhan outbreak even began. There were so many predictors. You know, the event 201 that was partially funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, where they spoke of a bat coronavirus that would cause a world pandemic, or a crimson contagion, which was a exercise run by the U.S. government where a pandemic begun in China started. Again, this is 2019 we're talking about. Or the fact that Netflix came out with a series called Pandemic last January is a three-part docudrama. And, you know, that you don't produce those overnight. So there was a lot of things in the works indicated that they knew this thing was going to happen. I suppose if we and alt media had really been putting the pieces together, we might have figured out. But I don't personally know anybody, any major figure in alt media, who predicted that there would be lockdowns caused by a pandemic. But the signs, the warning signs, were there. But it took a little time to discern them with hindsight.
No, yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, Event 201. Of course, there's also the Rockefeller document from 2010, Operation Lockstep.
Right.
This very thing. And with 201, you'll see how something like this is implemented, because they kind of tabletop this exercise, and they have focal points or contacts in media and government to coordinate these things. Also how to control fake news, right? So control the dissemination of information. And of course, when you centralize control information, that creates an opportunity for disinformation. It's just called the official story. And so we see now, you know, with the attempts to suppress any criticism or, you know, reports that contradict the official narrative of this event being suppressed by big tech, which are all tied in together. Why would they be negotiating contact tracing contract prior to? I never even heard that term prior to COVID-19 outbreak. You know, when it came out this spring. But even contact tracing is ridiculous, because it's like, you know, 6 degrees of separation. Basically, everyone is going to be traced, because it just fans out. And of course, it is ridiculous, because even this past week, you had Dr. Fauci saying that you don't have to worry about asymptomatic spreaders. So then, if you don't have to worry about asymptomatic spreaders, why the entire lockdown? Because the vast majority of the public is asymptomatic.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't, you know.
I'd like to see some true figures right now on they're talking about cases, but they're talking about PCR tests that have come back positive. But that's just showing some DNA, which Beta Stadler, who is the head of the Institute of Immunology in Bern, Switzerland, says the PCR test is meaningless because all it's detecting is a bit of genetic material, some DNA from a virus that may be long inactive. It does not in any way mean that you're infectious. In fact, even the New York Times about a week ago came out with an article questioning the PCR test, saying that up to 90% may be of no meaning of the positive test, bringing this very fact to light that it does not mean you're symptomatic or that you are infectious, I should say, that you represent any risk to anyone. So again, you know, there's so much illogic to what's being done. I mean, we've seen illogic before, like when we went to war with Iraq over weapons of mass destruction that didn't exist. So many times it's happened, but with this pandemic, I don't think I've ever seen a time that the media and government spokespersons were this far from truth that could be clearly discerned by any individual who is open-minded.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, you know, they create the fear and hysteria that makes you suspend your critical faculties, or makes you more gullible or more malleable, or easier to manipulate.
Right.
So they, you know, even with the, remember 9/11, they had the color coded warnings, you know,
yeah, they raised the code red, level, Yeah. Orange and red and stuff like that. Yeah.
It's now known that was all psychological warfare. There's no basis for that. And so, so this is kind of a similar thing. It's same way that anyone could be a terrorist. Now anyone, is a bio threat, could be a spreader. And they have super spreader events, these terms, that they develop. I'm sure this was all created out of the RAND Corporation or something, super spreader event, like the event in Sturgis, South Dakota, with the fake report that apparently it caused, 250,000 cases and added $12 billion cost to the public health system. And no basis for that. Again, that's just a report that goes out. But then again, I'm not hearing any outbreaks in Berlin when a million people got together and violated social distancing regulations. Of course, then we had the spectacle when you had these protests earlier this year in the late spring. All of a sudden you had a report out of, you had 1,200 public health experts saying that it wasn't a problem because racism was a bigger public health threat than COVID-19. So you didn't have to socially distance when you were rioting. So apparently it's a political virus, and it is a political virus. So we're kind of faced with this it's cognitive dissonance, and it's you have the spectacle or the stories of various leaders not following their own rules, or Nancy Pelosi not wearing a mask, which is getting her hair done because all the salons are closed in San Francisco. Her nephew Gavin Newsom has seen to that. But also, Gretchen Whitmer's husband, trying to get a boat during one of the holidays, invoking his name. You know who my wife is?
Oh, I missed that one.
Yeah, and violating the rules. You have Governor Pritzker in Illinois. He's a banker family that, created Barack Obama. One of them sons is now the governor of the state, and his family traveled to Florida, I think it was for Easter, where people weren't allowed to fly or get out of their houses. So these rules don't apply to them, of course. But I think that's part of the plan, because that's just in your face. It makes for politics or, red versus blue. But it covers up the bigger operation, I think, because a lot of these scandals, even the election itself, with the mail-in voting controversy, and it's going to create all types of, confusion around the elections. This again takes our eye off the ball, because ultimately the Uniparty is implementing this. It's not a question of Democrat or Republican here, although the Republicans are fairly better. They're not challenging the narrative at all. They're going along with it, but the problem is the narrative of the pandemic necessitating the lockdown and all these restrictions, all these violations of our civil liberties, restricting economic activity and retail activity, closing down movie theaters, and the worst effect is its effect on civil society, meaning that you can't get together, you can't assemble and protest, you can't assemble and organize. So how do you challenge the political system? How do you challenge that one or two of the parties if you can't get together and caucus and meet? How do you organize a petition recall without getting together with people?
As a matter of fact, this is another thing that points to the timing of this event. Not only was Easter canceled, but a lot of protests were occurring around the world when this virus and its subsequent lockdowns came. You have the yellow vest in France. Mm-hmm. You had the Hong Kong protests. They were protests against a forced vaccination. In January, in Virginia, had a huge gun rally, a pro-gun rally, where the media was kind of hoping that there'd be fireworks, because they're none. Actually, all the anti-lockdown rallies, it's interesting how peaceful they are compared to Antifa and Black Lives Matter. You don't see any looting of stores. You don't see any destruction. You see respect for property.
They get worse coverage than the violent, the mostly peaceful protests, as they call them.
The mostly, yeah. There's quite a few memes on mostly lately. Yeah, they're CNN reporting, showing the Twin Towers burning and saying that it's a mostly smoky but mostly sunny day.
Yeah. One thing, those protests were marked by how orderly they were and how peaceful they were, despite the fact that many people being armed in Michigan. You had the Governor Beshear in Kentucky, who another one who should be booted out of office for his contempt for his oath of office, where they hung him in effigy, and with the sign Sic Semper Tyrannis. And I was reading a report, and the reporter was writing, says it was what John Wilkes Booth yelled when he assassinated Abraham Lincoln. So that's true, because John Wilkes Booth was a Shakespearean actor, and he was doing Julius Caesar. But Sic Semper Tyrannis is thus to all tyrants. You know, it's Latin. And basically it's a warning to those in power. And it's on the state seal of Virginia. So it's, you know, so hanging political figures in effigy is a good thing. It's a message. It's sent to our would-be dictators that they shouldn't go too far. But it shows you the how insulated, how arrogant and corrupt the managerial political class is, that they can destroy people's lives, shut down entire economies, and they're shocked that some people may be driven to burn them in effigy, you know. There was the public health director, I think it was in Victoria, Australia, is reportedly getting death threats. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. These are just planted stories to create sympathy in the public. That's growing increasingly impatient with the very harsh lockdown in Australia. But even if they're genuine, you know, what does she expect?
Right, because actually the lockdowns mean death for many, many people. So she's not just making threats. She's actually enabling death. She's actually causing death. And the same is true for our people who are implementing lockdowns here in the United States, despite the fact that we have this incredibly high survival rate. Again, even if we take the inflated death rates of the CDC back on May 22nd, they reduced their estimated death rate to 0.26%, meaning that people have a survival rate of 99.74%. And that's not even taking into account the fact it's mostly the elderly that die from it. By the way, there are a few young people. I should mention that there is one thing that distinguishes COVID from normal flu, and that's this autoimmune reaction that takes place in the lungs. It's called cytokine storm. That can be deadly within a few days. It does occasionally happen in young people, not in teenagers or children, but occasionally in people in the 20s or 30s, but it is rare, and that needs to be explored. Why it is that a few people do have that reaction, but nothing, again, we talked earlier about the comparison to the Hong Kong flu and the Asian flu. Nothing historically would justify these measures. Nothing in common sense or logic justifies it. We had Reuters reporting recently that in America, 28 million people are now facing eviction because of inability to pay rent or mortgages. And if people become homeless, how in the world is that healthy? How is that less unhealthy than COVID, which has the 99.74%? Actually, it's higher than that. You know, if you listen to Dr. Erickson Masihi, who tested more people than anybody else in Bakersfield, California, they say that the chances of dying in California are 0.03%. In fact, you might have seen this, Tim. I just saw this today. A report, an official report in Ireland, indicates that only 100 people in Ireland have died from COVID alone. And the chances of dying from COVID in Ireland are, it translates, I believe, to 0.02%. Maybe I should add one more zero to that, but it's incredibly low. And so these lockdowns do not make any sense. Yes, COVID does exist. Yes, there are people who have died from it. And I am worried about Bill Gates bragging about how there's going to be a pandemic too and saying that will get their attention with a little smirk on his face. I'm a little concerned about they're releasing something new, whether it's, you know, full throttle 5G or some bioweapon that's being stored in some bioweapons lab. I don't know what that means exactly. I am concerned that it'll rise, but I can say right now definitively that based upon the death rates we currently see, there's no justification for the lockdowns. And this is something that Dr. Ron Paul brought out. Of course, he is a physician as well as a former presidential candidate and congressman, but he pointed out that after the death rates dipped 90%, this was great news. It and that was never mentioned in the mainstream media. Well,
I mean, why isn't this? I mean, this goes to show you this: the media is just there to scare the hell out of you, manipulate you.
Right.
They don't report the good news.
Right. he said that, like, that's why they switched from death to cases, because they didn't have deaths anymore to talk about. So, we're looking at criminal acts. Candace Owen wrote a very good column about the governor of Connecticut, her state, Ned Lamont, how he terrorized people by saying a child's death was linked to COVID-19. Turned out that the child had died at at-home accident having nothing to do with COVID-19. And she said that's like he panicked people. She said it's like yelling fire in a theater when there's no fire. She said he should not only step down, he should go to jail for that. I hope that our elected officials are local, and as well as the big shots in the state houses are made accountable for the destruction that's being caused, and that they're shaken awake about the nonsense of destroying millions of lives over a virus that is threatening at the best thousands of lives at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, you like to see some accounting, some reckoning for this. We all like to see that, because it really what they've done, and you know, they're killing far more people, destroying far more many lives than any virus could have at this point. And of course, as we suggest, it's not stupidity, it's not arrogance, it's malevolence, and it's all because they are, I think, working in concert, ultimately to help the oligarchs achieve their plan for the new normal, the Great Reset. And that's just why, when you sit back, so why does de Blasio sit back and destroy, you know, sit back or stand there and implement these policies, you know, that whether it's the police stand down during the riots, the sustained lockdown that's destroying these businesses. He's destroying New York City. Why does he want to destroy a city? It's never going to recover. The idea is they don't want it to recover under normal terms. They want to destroy it, and then they can rebuild it and create a smart city. And that's how you have to look at the overall economy, is they want to destroy it in order to rebuild it under their terms. And that's
right.
And they've so much have admitted it, which goes, I mean, I think maybe a good point to close the interview out on is the sort of this researchers like yourself, people you know, like me, who have looked into these things, these various false flags, conspiracies, and operations throughout history. Our analytical approach, I think, at least enabled me to immediately identify and call it out for pretty much a hoax, if you will, if you want to call it that, but basically an operation. It's not our. The real nature of the event or the threat wasn't how it was presented to us, and we were being misled, being rejuvenated in hysteria for another objective. And part of that is because we're familiar with the nature of the system and what it's capable of doing, whether it's 9/11, the JFK assassination, Pearl Harbor, Lusitania, Gulf of Tonkin, you know, the whole Vietnam War thing. Psychological warfare, the stuff, and how it's these corporations working in conjunction with various intelligence agencies have been able to, through control of information in the media and through the control of finance, to sort of manipulate society, drive it towards drive it in a direction they want it to go to. And this seemed to be just another operation like that.
Right. I actually quote a former Russian intelligence officer named Katchoff in my book, and he describes it. He compares it to 9/11. He calls it a psychological warfare operation. And actually, at the end of the interview, when he's asked what do you think the solution is, he says, I'm not a epidemiologist or a parasitologist, but what we really have to do is get rid of the parasites that rule over us. In other words, we don't have to worry about getting rid of the disease, but we need to get rid of the parasites who rule us. And I think it was absolutely spot on, and that speaks to what you were just saying.
Yeah, I think the whole COVID-19 operation can be seen as an accelerated attempt to accelerate Agenda 21. And if you're familiar with Agenda 21, then you could identify it. You could identify, you know, the operation and sort of at least be able to analyze it and not be driven into hysteria and fear about it. And that's one thing I found is people who are familiar with these things, whether it's, you know, the problems with the 9/11 event, the suspicion of behind it, but also things like Agenda 21 and the Club of Rome and these organizations. They were able to quickly identify the operation. Whereas if you're blue-pilled, you're a normie, you kind of accept things at face value, you're easily manipulated. I see it in my own family, you know.
Right. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And this is the problem, you know, like I say, I have intelligent people who, whether a church or federal medical professionals, who are smart people, but the problem is they've been blue-pilled all their lives as far as history and politics goes. And it's for them, you know, you really need the big picture. That's one reason I wrote the book Truth is the Lonely Warrior, was to try to give people the big picture, not just one piece of the jigsaw, but show them the whole jigsaw. Then the picture starts to make sense. It's difficult for people, you know, if you take 9/11 was an inside job, unless they know the history of false flag operations, of being deceived into war, the fact that our government is not a true democracy, but actually an oligarchy behind the scenes, that the media is consolidated and controlled. Unless they know these things, it's very hard to give them one piece of information. Like with, I'm sure that's true of COVID too. If you try to tell them this is an operation against you, unless they know some of the bigger picture, it's difficult for them to accept that. But they have to start somewhere. And I think that, again, with people being personally affected, dramatically affected by this lockdown, I see so many people depressed and distraught over what's taking place. I think that there's an open door there that perhaps did not exist before.
Which is, again, speaks to this opportunity that's created with this. This could be God's way of setting up the, the ruling elite, the cabal, the satanic cabal that's trying to, complete the ultimate revolution, the final revolution, as Huxley would call it, is in a way they might have gone out too far. They might have, this might be a bridge too far for them. They might have bitten off more than they can chew, and now they're going to choke on it because they've alerted so many people to this. And it's I made this point with you earlier, but other people, is that, you know, going into this in March 2020, the world, society wasn't headed in a healthy direction in it. Anyway, right? And if they're gonna boil a frog a little longer, there's no way you're gonna get the resistance. But when they leap, when they accelerate their operation, they actually have aroused a large chunk of the sleeping mass of people, and now there's a chance now that some resistance can be organized against this. I was listening to Rosa Corey talk recently. She's the expert on Agenda 21,
right?
And she offers advice how to fight it. And it's funny because a lot of this stuff, although it's a global operation, it's being implemented locally. It has to be. And there are ways to combat it locally. One thing is get the involved and get to know your local government. And if your government is a sustainable community and these things being implemented, try to inform the public of what that means. And at the very least, you can have some impact locally. And if you stop it locally, it stops it, because that's how it's being implemented. Other things you can't control, like whether it's presidential elections, what the Federal Reserve is doing, but it's one way to stymie this and slow it down. And so it isn't all hopeless. It just, they want you, locked in your home, staring at your computer screen and pressing the like button, but they don't want you like organizing and getting involved. Of course, the lockdowns help with that, right? They prevent you. Look at the government itself is no longer functioning properly. You can't even have a normal court proceeding because the courts are shut down over a virus that kills, 0.02%, 99.7% survival rate. So you can't have normal court proceedings. You can't have normal governmental proceedings. You can't petition your government. You can't, hearings can't be held, which by law they're supposed to be open because of this supposed virus, the threat it represents. So that's why you have to call out the fraud of all this stuff. And to me, that's nothing, is that the breakthrough will occur when some political figure actually calls it out for what it is.
I'd love to see that. I don't think Putin's going to do it, but I do know that I quote him in here, head of Russia's coronavirus response, their MD, I believe it's Mishikov, I quote him in the book, says it's all BS. He uses the full word. He says it's all BS. It's nothing more than a regular
now,
flu.
Now, think about the implications behind that, though. If it's all BS, that means the entire political system, the media structure, educational, huge portions of civil society have all been corrupted. They're all part of this operation. Right. And so what it does, this is why some people are, I think, are afraid to confront it on those terms, because their entire civic engagement has to be reevaluated. They're understanding how the world works.
Right. And I would love to see that. That's so important. You know, there was a time, you know, when you had the Tsar and the Empress of Byzantium and the Holy Roman Empire. There was a time when you had the church and you had a Christian state and you had Christian rulers who their intelligence services and their armies would be protecting the church. I feel right now the church is very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have those protectors anymore. It thinks that constitutions alone will protect them. We've seen how constitutional rights are being shredded. I hope that we will see a great, great awakening amongst the people, and that we will see. You were talking about local action. Not only have I, you know, written this book, COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come Red Pilled. You know, I published a letter in my local newspaper saying I'm an RN. Here's why I think the lockdowns are unnecessary. I quoted Sukrit Bhakti, the microbiologist, and other experts. They limited to 400 words, so only so much I could say. But local action can be very important. And, you know, in my own town, we actually they actually stopped 5G. They actually stopped small transmitters. Now, I that may not continue, but the local selectmen were educated on the dangers of wireless, and they rebuffed Verizon, you know.
Yes.
Sometimes it can happen. It can happen, even though these big shots have all this power. So I believe in global action. I also believe in local action and people doing whatever they can, whether it's joining in a class action lawsuit against unconstitutional violations of liberties, or joining a mass protest, or just calling up a local talk show, talking to your local town managers. Whatever it takes, I would love to see people active throughout this country and the world in stopping this thing. I think that actually is very pleasing to God, because he knows what's up.
Yeah, and what we saw with the COVID thing is the local officials and down-ballot office holders are very important. Look at the George Soros effort in electing these local DAs that are radicals. So George Soros recognizes the significance of local office holders.
You know, good point.
You know, so these things do matter. And I know there's a tendency, I don't want to vote, participate anymore. Even I've fallen into that recently, because I don't want to vote for any of the parties. Really, your local governments do matter. And it's where you can actually have an impact on these things. And all more important now than ever, I think, you know, because your local board of supervisors, the decisions they make have greater impact on your life than the president of the United States. So
that's correct. That's one reason why my family, we subscribe to the local newspaper, because it impacts us. We don't subscribe to any the big newspapers, but we obviously I follow alternative media all the time, but I like to know what's happening locally, because it affects us, and hopefully we can affect it.
Okay, well, James, the book, COVID-19 and the Agenda to Come, Red Pilled, they can get it, I guess, right now at Amazon?
Yeah, it's done well on Amazon. It was actually, after two days after publication, ranked number 254. That was due to some heavy promotion and a nice endorsement from a major podcast. But it's still selling very well. But because of the risk of censorship, I'm also doing a separate printing, which is this exact same book, in case it does get censored off of mainstream. I will still continue to make it available, and Power of Prophecy is selling right now, and I'm working. I have another secondary seller I've just lined up, and I'm trying to make it as available as possible. Again, it's jam-packed with information, including a lot of censored stuff. Everything is footnoted. Everything is sourced, And it's an effort to cover every major aspect of the crisis so that people have in one place a resource they can go to.
Excellent. Well, thank you, James. I'll let you go. And that's, I guess they can follow your work at jamesperloff.com, correct?
Yes, my website is jamesperloff.com, and I'm on Twitter as James Perloff. And to really appreciate what you're doing, you know, you're one of the best informed hosts out there. And again, I think that comes from having so many informed guests on your show. But I really appreciate you taking the time to have me on tonight. And great work. So delighted that your platform has been sustained for so long and continues to maintain a high level of listener interest.
Yeah, well, knock on wood, right? So, okay, well, thank you so much, and you're welcome.
So, thank you. God bless.
Good night, then.
Okay.
Bye-bye.